we are nonpartisan and we mean it. Like we have integrity around it.
I'm Eric Wilson, managing partner of Startup Caucus, an investment fund and incubator for Republican campaign technology. Welcome to the Business of Politics show. On this podcast, we bring you into conversation with the entrepreneurs who build best-in-class political businesses, the funders who provide the capital, and the operatives who put it all together to win campaigns. Alex Nimczewski is the CEO of Ballot Ready, an online voter guide to local, state, and federal elections. They're building the infrastructure for voters to be informed in every election that matters to them. Ballot Ready is venture-backed and has raised nearly $3 million to date. In our conversation today, we discuss the challenge of collecting election data from 50 states, how Alex educates investors about the industry, and how Ballot Ready stays nonpartisan. Alex, your background isn't in politics, which makes you unique for a founder in this industry. So what drew you to this space for a startup?
Well, when I started Ballot Ready, I was teaching some coding classes, one at Booth School of Business and one at a coding boot camp. And I made a website for myself to keep track of all the candidates that were going to be on my ballot. You know, my ballot was like, I think it was like 80.
So this is in Chicago,
races.
Right?
This was in Chicago.
Got it. Yeah. So you've got a lot of elections there.
Yeah, exactly. Lots of local stuff like water reclamation commissioner. And I was surprised that my ballot was going to be so long. I didn't know what the offices did. I didn't know who the candidates were. So I just wanted to create something to make it easier for me to vote informed all the way down the ballot. And it was fun and useful for me. But also when I told anyone about it, they were like, oh yeah, I don't know who to vote for all the judges. And this included, like, I talked to political professors. I talked to the mayor of Chicago who admitted he did not know who to vote for the judges. And I was like, that's a little ironic. And yeah, he may have been being like, you know, jokey with me, but I kind of don't, it like, there's so many on the ballot.
Is this the legendary Rahm Emanuel?
Yes. Yeah.
I think he might have been pulling your leg. Because he probably put that person on the ballot.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. I think he funded those folks. But the point is, it's hard for people to know. And I think I saw this gap in the information that people have about elections that I wanted to solve.
So I love it as a startup, right? Because it's you use the tech to solve a problem that you had. So it was like already validated with at least one user. And this particular problem that you decided to tackle, which is helping voters become informed about their local elections, offers a really interesting challenge that we see frequently in political startups, which is that the customer is different than the user, right? So you, the voter, want to be informed and are getting the value, but the customer in many cases with Ballot Ready is an advocacy group or a nonprofit. How do you walk that tightrope?
Okay, so just to make it clear for everybody, we make voter guides or GOTV tools for customers who are, like you said, C3s, C4s, advocacy groups, but also brands. The way we do it is we know if we make it useful for a user, aka a voter, it will be useful for our customer. So one of our values is that we are voter or constituent first, because we make tools for voters even when they're not voting. So constituents, they are our primary person we care about. We know that our customers will continue to buy from us if it's a good experience for voters. Sometimes it's hard because our customers give us feedback that we know from all of our, you know, user experience research is not actually more helpful for voters. But so then what we have to do is be like, hey, we tested this. We did research. And also what we have to do is be like, actually, that might be a good idea. Let's test that. Let's do some research behind that and then get back to them. So it does make it a little more challenging, but also more interesting.
Yeah. And it's a really just valuable resource. And it's kind of an underrepresented constituency. I talk to folks all the time who are looking at this challenge of, goodness gracious, I thought I was an informed voter because I knew who my statewide candidates and my federal candidate was. But then I got there and I just had to stop voting because I didn't know what those positions were. I didn't know they were on the ballot. And so it's a tough place to build a business in, right? And you've got to align the incentives with the finances. And so it is definitely a tightrope that you have to walk there.
So somehow the way you just said that makes it seem like it's harder than it is. So I think we've done a really good job of walking that tightrope just because we know our customers want voters to have information. They want them to vote, number one, and sometimes they want them to vote for the candidates our customers are backing. And they know the reasons voters aren't voting is because of a lack of information, whether it's they don't know who to vote for, or they're just not quite confident enough about who to vote for. And research shows when people are more informed, more confident, they are more likely to vote. Or they might not know like that there is a local election that they can vote in coming up. Or they might not know how to sign up to vote by mail. They just might feel overwhelmed. So our incentives are pretty aligned with between our voters, users, and our customers.
So, Alex, why is it so difficult to collect data around these state and local elections?
So elections are often run by local election authorities or state election authorities. So sometimes a state election authority might not even know a local election is even happening because they're not the ones who run it. So given that local election authorities run the elections, they are the ones who have the data on what candidates are running, on the rules for signing up to vote by mail, on the locations of drop boxes and polling places. So what that means for us is, you know, we can't just go to 50 places. We have to go to thousands of these local election authorities because they're local, they're also small. So they don't have a lot of staff and their staff has higher priorities than making data easily available to folks like us. Their priorities are like running elections securely. So what that means for us is they often don't post data online. Sometimes we have to make phone calls. We have to send faxes. We've gotten maps in the mail. Yeah, we got a floppy disk.
I don't even know how I would access that.
We had to take it to a like computer store, basically, like a computer repair shop. Sometimes it is just so surprising how kind of old school these election authorities feel. But at the same time, we have a lot of compassion and understanding that they have higher priorities than sending us data. And also, we never want to piss them off. And they have a lot of hard work to do. So I would like it if everything was online, but I understand why it's not as easily accessible as it could be.
I know you don't want to upset these local election administrators, but do you get the sense that sometimes this is what we might call malicious compliance where, okay, I'll give you the data, but it's going to be on a CD and you've got to pay for the shipping? Or is it more often the case that they just don't have the support or resources they need at that level to modernize?
So once I watched a YouTube video of the winners of the election, instead of like, that's like how they put it out there instead of typing it out. It was a 13 minute long video of this woman just announcing in this race, the winner is this person by this number of votes. Like so crushingly boring and like so time intensive for gathering that data.
And like she already had the data right there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think she was trying to do like a fun, like newscaster kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny. I that's just like a funny example, but I don't think they're being malicious. I think they are just being innocent. And, you know, sometimes trying to make their own jobs a little more entertaining. Sometimes it's just they're
right.
Not
they
sure
get their 15 minutes in the spotlight every 2 years or so when people pay attention to what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is a really important part of the work that you're doing, which is standardizing that data to now becoming the infrastructure for other entrepreneurs to build on top of. I'm curious to hear, you know, do you consider that a pivot, and how did that come to be?
We don't consider it a pivot because most of what we sell is our tools, voter guide or GOTV tools that are built on top of our data. We do make that data available via API for other folks to build off of just because we think there's a lot of room for innovation in the space. We trust our customers to know how to reach the people they're trying to reach. So if they want to make a tool, like, yeah, go for it. We still, by far, most of our customers are using our tool because, you know, sometimes they don't have an engineering team to handle an API. Their main goal is getting voters information, so they don't want to build something if they don't need to.
Got it. And I think one of the images that I go to so much, particularly in politics, where you do have this data that is not standardized, it's different by all 50 states or different agencies, is that the first step to really building useful applications is sorting the Legos by color. And I use that sort of graphic that people may have seen quite a bit because, you know, yes, there are all these really cool things that we can do, like matching people to the right candidates that they should support and helping them learn about, you know, who has influence over the projects that matter to them. But it all starts with organizing this data. It's incredibly valuable and really important work. So kudos to you and the team for working on that.
Thank you. I think people underestimate how complicated our database is. They think it might be able to just be set up on a spreadsheet, but
right.
It is more complicated than that. Just one small example is we have to maintain several sets of shapefiles because of redistricting. We have the shapefile for the upcoming election. We have the shapefile that represents the district of the current office holder. And we have the shapefile of the last election. Like, you know.
And I'm sure that is a different shapefile format in all 50 states, every different county, right?
The worst is like what seemed like hand-drawn drawings of maps that we, you know, we have to make the shapefile sometimes because sometimes they don't know what it is or they don't know where it is. They just, you know,
send you a picture
in the mail. Yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to the Business of Politics show. I'm speaking with Alex Nemchevsky, CEO of Ballot Ready. Podcast listeners, Alex, know that I advise founders who are approaching the political space that it's best to pick a side, Republican or Democrat, before going to market. Ballot Ready is certainly the exception because you are nonpartisan. And that is because you are dealing with information, with election details. I'm curious to hear, what are some of the challenges that has presented for you?
For us, it's so important to be nonpartisan. It's like almost as if, you know, you wouldn't question whether a board of election was, they're supposed to be nonpartisan too. And we want to give voters information. That's why we exist, to have this layer of data and infrastructure there. I think some people in the space have this expectation that if you are in the space, you are on one side or the other. So sometimes we have to be like, no, we are nonpartisan and we mean it. Like we have integrity around it. We've had to make decisions about, especially early on, it's one reason we don't recommend candidates on Ballot Ready is because there's so much room for partisanship and bias in there. So we've made decisions about like
or how even we just display the accusations, information. Right? The appearance. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We make decisions like how we order the candidates, what information we gather on the candidates. If we were partisan, we wouldn't do it that way. Most people understand that we don't really have. Some people will be like, oh, are people worried about that? But it hasn't caused us any issues. Most people understand that that's what makes us so valuable to democracy in this country, that we are a place that voters can come and trust whatever side they're on. you know, whether they flip back and forth between sides, whether they're not affiliated with any party, they can trust our info.
So what has your approach then been with investors on educating them about this space and frankly convincing them that this is an industry worth investing in?
So it is actually, the political market is actually big, and our customers both spend in the political market, in the advocacy market, and sometimes when our customers are brands, they're spending, you know, corporate social responsibility market. So altogether, it is a very formidable market. Like the social advocacy market in 2019 was almost $30 billion. It's not a market that investors don't like. It's also pretty recession-proof, as we've seen.
Right. Because you've got to have elections every 2 years.
Yeah, exactly. and advocacy work and social impact work in odd years too. So I think there is that education piece, which I kind of just spoke to, and some investors aren't aware of that. But that's kind of another reason we're in this, is like it's a relatively emerging market. There have been big exits recently, like with Every Action and EverFi, that investors may have heard of, but they may not put them together. So I think the fact that it feels newer to investors is sometimes very exciting to them, because I mean, that's the whole point of
they're having to sit up and take notice, right? Because some of the transactions are just so large.
Yeah, exactly.
Alex, a number of the entrepreneurs that we work with are sometimes nervous about taking investment to grow their company because the path isn't so clear to them for how investors get their money back, right? I mean, it is, as you mentioned, it is an emerging market and we're starting to see some of these exits, but there's no tried and true path. So how do you think about that as you fundraise?
So there are paths, like these, you know, EverFi, Every Action, Fiscal Note, who IPO'd recently. There are companies that have done very well for their investors. I think another thing about what we do that might be unique is we have customers who are corporations, and we are in this CSR, corporate social responsibility market as well. And that is a little more obvious to investors. You know, corporations are spending billions on kind of social impact for their employees and for their consumers. And investors are familiar with that, and it feels good to them to back a company that is showing a lot of traction in that space.
Yeah, you're selling to customers who aren't going to go away after election day, which I think sometimes is very nerve-wracking to investors, because, you know, win or lose, the campaign goes away. But you and I know from working in this industry that there's always another campaign around the corner. There's the advocacy work and the off years. Campaigns are getting longer, but I get it to an investor. They like seeing, okay, well, these corporations are investing in this, and CSR or ESG becoming more of a focus, especially in terms of recruiting employees. So that's a good way of framing out of, you know, yes, you touch politics and you've got some customers in politics, but you're really, I guess, making a portal into a tough area for corporations that are looking to engage in ways that are responsible, that aren't going to upset half their customer base. And you're providing them an opportunity to do that. So that's a really good note.
Just to add to that, campaigns are not our target customer.
Right, right.
I don't know that anyone has really cracked the code on selling to them. Like, none of these big exits have been primarily from selling to campaigns. So obviously a lot of money is spent there, but it's tough because people, you know, campaigns don't, for the reasons you said, they're somewhat temporary. So I would love to see someone figure that out.
Yeah. I think to some extent it's a lack of imagination from investors in the business community, because it doesn't fit nicely into the models for investing and getting returns, right? Because you're saying, okay, well, I'm a your average congressional campaign is what, a $2.5 million enterprise, but it doesn't follow the standard monthly recurring revenue sort of thing. And so when it throws off the spreadsheets, the MBAs get nervous. So that's a really important observation. I think you are seeing, not as publicly, I think, but more private equity starting to take notice of the campaign industry, and certainly see it with some of the firms. Technology software really hasn't made that leap yet. So Alex, aside from Ballot Ready and helping voters learn about their local elections, what's another problem or opportunity that you've noticed that you think would make for a great startup?
I only think about Ballot Ready. I don't have a good answer for this one. I just think about Ballot Ready, how we can solve our problems and serve our customers more.
Well, let me try it another way then. Alex, what's next on the roadmap for Ballot Ready? Where are you looking to grow, expand? What's that opportunity that's going to be the new big thing maybe in 22 or 24?
We last year expanded our database to include office holders. So we had previously gathered who wins elections, but now we maintain office holders and how to contact them. And this is because we are starting to provide our customers actions for their users to take in between elections. So we have these elections focused actions like registration, sign up to vote by mail, get informed about your ballot. But we're expanding to, how can you stay civically engaged? How can you respond to issues you care about in your community at the local level by taking local meaningful actions, whether it's calling your city council person to tell them about an issue you're having or organizing with your friends. So we are very excited about this because we know there's a demand from our customers and from voters who we call constituents. So that's the next thing we're working on.
Well, Alex, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Listeners can go fill out their own ballot and learn more about what's on their upcoming elections at ballotready.org. Link is available in the show notes. Remember to subscribe to the Business of Politics show wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're a first-time listener, go check out some of our previous episodes. And if you learned something today that made you a little bit smarter, please share it with a friend or colleague. And with that, we will see you next time. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.